Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie. I want to get out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar here with Jack Estabrook.
I have the part.
Cody Wolf.
Hi. Jack stole it from myself.
There is really just one catchphrase. Our movie this week is the...
I would like just Jack to dub all my lines for this episode.
our movie this week is Masters of the Universe, the live action, I think it's 1987 film. And as the back says, back of the DVD says, only the universe could hold adventure this big. And for a movie like this, we had to bring in a special guest. Our friend Ken Chapman is here. Thank you. Take us
through. You can't tell, but I'm bowing.
That's right. To take us through Eternia and the Power of Grayskull.
Am I the only one in this room, by the way, who has never seen the cartoon He-Man?
Because was such a big part of my childhood.
You've never seen an episode.
He's a little too young, I think. He-Man was done by like '86.
Yeah, I was born in '87, so.
Wow. But even on like YouTube or anything, you've never seen one?
They've actually rebooted it more recently. I want to say Cartoon Network has a He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, it was a little more
serious.
I've never seen it, so this
movie
was just ridiculous.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, actually, in a way, you still may be better off because this movie has almost nothing to do
for those of us that know it and had the toys like I did. I had all of them. I had the green slime pit that would, like, my parents threw out after a week because it stained everything yellow. And, like, I had it all, and this bears no resemblance
to my... We had Castle Grayskull growing up. We had the toy.
Yep.
Castle Grayskull.
Castle Grayskull, the play set. It was huge. It was awesome.
Which, to give you an idea, the cartoon, the He-Man Masters of the Universe cartoon was basically set on planet Eternia and had nothing to do with Earth. They had no interest in Earth. It was like fantasy people like fighting.
Like sorcerers and swords.
Literally sword and sorcery. I can't remember a single laser.
There was no laser. It was sort of like Conan adapted for kids. It was sort of like very like Conan Light, I would describe
it. I had figured the cartoon had nothing to do with Earth, and this just felt like one of those 80s things where every franchise had to be brought to Earth or brought to the current time. If it's Star Trek and takes place in the future, they have to bring it to 80s.
You got the impression New that York, they were so surprised to get this movie greenlit that they realized they didn't have any money to actually
to
do it.
Eternia.
So when they had a greenlit, they just said, well, we have to put this somewhere. Let's do one throne room set, and the costumes are going to be really expensive, and that's all we have.
They made one. Well, so we start off, you never see... There is no exterior of Castle Grayskull in this movie. There's just a matte painting that they keep showing us.
Yeah.
Which annoyed me right from the word go. I'm like, that's it? All we're getting is a matte painting of Castle Grayskull. Okay. And a bunch of weird narration that just kind of tells us, like, whoever controls Castle Grayskull has the power to control the universe. No details. Nothing more specific than that. In fact, really right up until the end of the movie, it's not clear why you need to control Castle Grayskull to control the universe.
And once again, one of our movies opens with narration that's confusing and pointless.
I'm familiar with the cartoon.
Every time I see that,
I was more confused by the narration. If you watch this movie without the narration, you're probably better off because you wouldn't expect things to make sense.
Yeah, I feel like this does deserve a director's cut sort of treatment.
Yeah.
You know?
To see where things... Well, my first big laugh was, I saw this as a kid, I didn't remember it. This movie is a shameless ripoff of other 80s hits, including... It's not even a ripoff. It's just a direct attempt to copy the Superman opening titles.
Yeah.
When the names fly in.
Ilya and Alexander Solkan, you expect their names.
Yeah.
Even the music... I remind me of the Superman music. I wrote that down because it was like the same sort of almost the same melody, and then it like went into its own thing.
It came back
to the same like dude.
It's like just different enough, so they're like, don't sue us. Yeah.
You know? If only Superman had, or I see him and said Superman. If He-Man had run backwards around the Earth to turn back time, I feel like we missed that scene.
I think this movie
but...
was connected somehow to the Superman franchise too, wasn't it?
It's not from the Salkinds. It looks like a Salkinds movie.
I was reading that. They had planned on... Is it owned by the same people? I think it was made by like the same... Because I was reading somewhere that they had taken a bunch of money and split it between this movie and Superman 4, I think it is.
Oh, really?
And they were hoping the profits from these movies would help pay for a Spider-Man movie, I think it was a Spider-Man movie. And then both movies bombed, so they didn't end up making the Spider-Man movie.
Well, those
movie.
Were both Warner Brothers movies, so that's very possible.
I think that was what they were...
And was that about the same time as the Spider-Man live-action TV series? Wasn't that the late 80s?
That was a little earlier.
Was it?
Yeah, because that's pretty terrible, too. What, actually, that, I just realized that probably Warner Brothers figured they were safe to rip off the Superman. No, they couldn't sue themselves for ripping off the Superman opening title sequence.
Yeah.
And then I see Richard Edlund's name in the credits doing visual effects, and I'm like, oh, God, how did he get dragged into this? I mean, this is a guy who's a legitimate special effects superstar. I mean, at this point.
Money.
Yeah, money.
Special effects weren't awful.
No, they're not. They're not. They're not terrible.
They weren't special, but they were certainly effects.
I like the fact that every character from the animated series was represented, and they kept saying their names over and over and over again, like Evelyn, Skeletor.
They did give you He-Man, a lot. He-Man,
Sorceress, Man at Arms, Teela. I was like, oh, they're all there.
They do give you a lot of that, and then
to remind the kids at home who's who, at every line they had to. That's right, Evelyn. No, Evelyn. That's my plan, Evelyn. Come on, Evelyn. Evelyn, you go. That's funny,
because at the end of the movie, I didn't know what her name was.
Really? I'm with Jack. I was like, oh, they can ease up on saying her name. You know,
I wasn't paying
attention. Just any characters. It's just kind of...
And the ripoffs don't start there, because this movie starts... So we go from a Superman ripoff to the movie actually starts in Castle Grayskull to a shameless Star Wars ripoff of Skeletor walking in... through what could only be it's basically a knockoff of Darth Vader walking through a crowd of
with like the line stormtroopers
and the music.
I was thinking they all look like they were in Darth Vader masks. I mean, they had the black masks and they all look like Darth Vader, and then him walking down
there.
If you ever saw the costume for the Death Star gunners, the black it's literally the exact same costume.
It looks just like that. And we Meg Foster back on the podcast from They Live.
Yes, she's Evelyn. Yep, she is.
That's what she is.
She is. Yeah.
I thought I recognized
her. So Skeletor is basically, to make Langella. Analogies, he's the Darth Vader. Actually, he's sort of Emperor. Like Darth Vader and the Emperor as one.
He even gets the Emperor's death.
Yeah.
He's a generic sorcerer bad guy.
Yeah, he's a bad guy. Evelyn is his sort of... assistant?
She like his queen?
I don't really... It's not really clear what her
she's
role
like his
is.
Chief henchman that like does his dirty work, but...
But he also
only last minute
not...
after his other henchmen fail miserably.
I kept having flashbacks to Super Mario Brothers too, which I think was later than this one. But
it was
where like he was almost like Bowser, and then she was whatever that woman's name was in.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, in
that
Super
same
Mario.
Kind of
with that
relationship.
Yeah, where the bad guy is bad she's even like to other henchmen. Bad guys. You're like, why does anyone work for him?
And another Star Wars parallel would be him using the quote unquote mercenaries to go after. He-Man and bring him back.
Comes in later.
Oh my God, yes, the Boba Fett scene.
In fact, right down to the storyboard is the same. I mean, it's
they're all lined
the blocking,
up.
Everything.
Except
like,
they introduce each one in this one.
Yeah.
They go through and name each one.
Because they're all from the show.
Because they're all, you had to get that
and
product
can
plug.
We just say that they cheaped out on Trapjaw? He's just a dude with a metal chin strap.
Yeah, that
instead
was
instead of having like a robot lower jaw.
Well, which is the one
child,
makeup effect they seem to cheap out on. So, Skeletor is taking over Castle Grayskull.
He has the sorceress imprisoned already.
He's his sorceress imprisoned, which, if you're not familiar with the show...
you don't know who that is.
You have no idea why this even means anything.
Is that his
who
grandmother?
She is. Yeah. I mean, it makes no sense. And Skeletor, then, there's also a battle going on outside Castle Grayskull. We never really see Eternia. We just see desert around.
And people, like,
Eternia.
Standing there with their hands behind their heads, like they're about to get shot. It's the same shot every time Skeletor addresses Eternia. It's the exact same shot of people just sitting there with their arms up behind their heads.
And did you see, when Skeletor does a video projection to talk to Eternia, it's like a grade school photo where you're seeing two Skeletors.
He's,
you're
like, standing
like his
there.
Face, and then, like, one is turned. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
I
old,
do.
Old school 80s. And I'm like, wait, why are there two shots within one? Like, why are you doing a double exposure on... How would this help him address his troops? And so he's doing some kind of vague, like... I don't know. We're taking over Eternia. You know, if you're not with us, you're against us. Something, something. I don't know.
Doesn't look like there's much of Eternia that's worth ruling, but, you know.
Yeah, and also, to keep the ripoffness, Eternia looks a lot like Tatooine.
It does.
A lot like Tatooine. So I'm at this point, I'm getting overwhelmed by the ripoffness of this. I'm like, oh, this whole movie is going to be this ripoffish. I'm going to be... The Star Wars fan in me is going to be a lot more... A lot more upset.
I'm surprised Star Wars never came to like 80s America. like every other
sci-fi franchise. Even George Lucas was like, you know what? Hold on, I've got my limits.
Star Trek did it. Why not?
Yeah. I'll make my fans hate me, but I've got limits. So He-Man comes in, like, fighting with some Skeletor troops. And I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but, like, normally when you're shooting this kind of thing, the actor is using a sword made of, like, balsa wood, typically.
Yeah.
It's clear they didn't do that with Dolph Lundgren, and I don't know why, because even as strong as Dolph Lundgren is, he's clearly having difficulty wielding this sword.
Yeah.
And it's very awkward to watch. I don't understand that choice. I don't know if, like, Dolph Lundgren insisted on that, or if, like, the studio did.
Love how he keeps holding on to the sword even after he's grabbed a laser and he starts shooting people from, like, 500 feet away. It's like, wouldn't he ditch the sword and start Ramboing everybody?
If all of the Skeletor's guards weren't horrible shots when he's standing right in the middle of the room, which comes up at least twice in this movie.
Yeah.
Where he just stands up from behind cover. And there's 18 guys shooting lasers at him, and they all miss horribly.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even have his awesome Nazi cross chest armor on. He's just bare-chested in a loincloth.
He wears a loincloth for the entire movie. That decision needed to be reevaluated by the studio. The entire movie, he's in a loincloth.
You think he would have picked up some Lee jeans or something when he landed in wherever he was.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of this movie, too, wondering who the hell dubbed over Dolph Lundgren's lines.
It didn't sound like Dolph
and
Lundgren.
And then I realized it was Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren dubbed his own lines.
Yeah.
Which
is ridiculous.
This is some of the worst ADR work.
Probably a lot of pyrotechnics going on, so they couldn't use the native audio.
No, it's because they... He couldn't speak very well.
He has
well,
a very thick accent. Yeah.
And he had something in his contract about he had to have like 3 chances to redub the lines before they had somebody else dub them.
Oh.
And by the end of it, they're just like, they were under the gun. They're like, just let's go with his lines that he dubbed.
Okay.
Even though they were terrible still.
It's clear they minimized his dubbing dialogue. I mean, they pulled like the Cindy Crawford and Fair Game and like started handing his dialogue off to other. You can tell in the movie that his dialogue is getting shoveled off on other characters because they obviously have a problem.
Which I think brought Man at Arms into the spotlight a lot more. I'm sure he got about 2/3 of He-Man's lines.
Oh yeah, Man at Arms. Well, because He-Man, Man at Arms, who's kind of like a middle-aged dad who has all kinds of guns with him, and his daughter Teela, mm-hmm. who. Is never really on the show. She basically just hangs around and is sort of like technically a warrior, but is basically just a love interest for He-Man,
whose alter ego Prince Adam is not even mentioned in this movie.
Who's not? Yeah. So, at all. So putting Teela in the movie
or the
is
battle
kinda,
cat,
you know,
yeah, or his giant boots. So they rescue. How do you
they
say?
They try to rescue the sorceress.
Well, they try and they fail.
They fail.
And then they find. What's the name of the character? Like
Grildor. Yes, there's a character in the animated series called Orko, who's sort of a comic relief. And when I was like 5 years old, he was my favorite character. He's that character that was funny and cool, and he was this weird looking. He's basically like a disembodied cloak with little yellow eyeballs peeking out under
his big hat.
Well, obviously, I don't think they could have pulled off this effect in the 1980s, so instead they went with Billy Barty. Now, Billy Barty is really cool. I have no problem with Billy Barty, but they made him this generic kind of.
He's basically
labyrinth-style troll character.
He would have fit in Willow.
Yeah. Somewhere.
Well, I was going to say, it feels like a character from Willow melded with a character from Labyrinth melded with Yoda. Like,
that's
and
a good,
kind
and
of
again,
like,
yeah. ripping off yeah. once again. Yeah.
And they just threw them all together.
And
into
he's got
one.
Some robot key that he has to use to get them to another. Now, why didn't they just beam back into Skeletor's lair immediately?
Holy cow.
For some reason, they have to beam to Earth and then wait a few days or something, and then beam back to Skeletor's lair because they clearly.
I don't think they chose to beam to Earth. I think it was. We have to go wherever. Yeah.
Well, let's set this up a little bit. So Grildor has developed this thing he calls the Cosmic Key.
Yes.
And for reasons that even in the movie characters question, for some reason Grildor gave Skeletor a Cosmic Key. Mm-hmm. And again, it's great when He-Man and his friends are even like, why did you give him a Cosmic Key?
He's like, yeah, I don't know why I did that.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't know. It was, you know what? We've all made mistakes. Let's just move on, okay?
This is one I'll deal with.
So not me.
Yeah, and so he's got another Cosmic Key. Which is funny later on, because Grildor, who has made two of these cosmic keys, is disturbingly unaware of how they function or work. And he's now manufactured two of them.
And I'm sure we'll get to it, but the grabbing music out of the air part was one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get... But what I'd like to point out about the cosmic key is how it seems like the entire movie, the boyfriend, after they're warped to Earth... is just hammering random keys in this thing because he thinks it sounds like a synthesizer. Yeah. And that is the exact thing that opened the portal to Earth in the first place. Why does that not happen again at any point in the movie?
Well, it's convenient. Well, I have a theory on that because that is a great question. So He-Man, they go through Grildor's Yoda-like hut, which is very Yoda-like.
Yes, of course.
And then they have to escape Yoda's hut. They somehow end up back in Castle Grayskull trying to fight Skeletor. And they go, oh, things are terrible. We're outnumbered.
Hit the Grildor,
use your cosmic key to get us out of here. And he's like, I don't know where we're going to be going. And they're like, well, anywhere is better than here. So he just randomly opens a vortex. They jump into it. And the vortex takes them to modern day. Takes them to 1987 Earth.
Where we now have Courtney Cox working in a diner.
On her last day, setting up some backstory that we never actually visit.
All of a sudden, now imagine this. We're in a fantasy world where there are fantasy characters fighting a fantasy sorcerer. They're using swords and lasers. It's bizarre. There's magic. There's this cosmic key. Now, all of a sudden, we're in a diner in 1980s, and Courtney Cox is talking about her boyfriend and how she wants to move to California or whatever.
Or to New Jersey.
Or New Jersey.
I think they're in California. At least they allude to it.
Or Texas. Or maybe they're
in Texas. They at least shot it in California because there's palm trees. The one outdoor scene during the day.
That's true.
Is there's palm trees.
That's true.
And I think there was another California reference, but I can't. Maybe. It was enough where I was like, okay, they're in California.
Maybe they're in California. Yeah. And she wants to go to New Jersey. And Jack is right. This jump, this like shift in the movie is so jarring because you've been watching people with loincloths and swords and like
Superman music playing.
Troll, and now you're like, and now this is my
Grildor's
last day.
Talking to a cow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, after Courtney Cox, like, oh, it's my last day at the barbecue place, and my parents died, so I'm going to move to New Jersey, even though I don't know anybody there.
And it's New Jersey.
My microphone's
let's just
off,
visit
sorry.
That.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Well, wasn't she in a Bruce Springsteen video?
That's right.
Is that why she went to New
Jersey? Wants to go to New Jersey to be in the Bruce Springsteen
the
video.
Boss just
she
cast
was
her.
In, she was in
there.
Dancing in the Dark. That's probably what she was best known for. So, okay, so He-Man, Man-at-Arms, Teela... and Grildor land on Earth. There's a weird scene played for comedy where Grildor almost dies drowning.
Yeah,
he's face down in a swamp.
He's face down in a swamp drowning, and everyone's like, like "Oh, Grildor!"
Although I'll also argue he has gills, so why would drowning even be an issue?
I don't, and I'm not really sure why he can't fix himself. It's almost like the weight of his costume. I feel like that was like an outtake where they were like, hey, that costume's so heavy, that guy might drown.
They're like, Billy Body almost died on our set. We're using it.
And let's play it for laughs.
Yeah.
So they are now in Earth, except they landed and they don't have the cosmic key. They know it has to be nearby.
Somehow
landed like miles away.
I don't understand how, because obviously I'm spoiling something now, but later at the movie where Skeletor finally decides to use his cosmic key to go to Earth, even though he decides to let wave after wave of incompetent henchmen to go before him, he has it in his hand. He presses the buttons, and then he arrives on Earth with the cosmic key in his
hand. Clearly knows how to use it.
I guess
precise locations, too. Like, they're tracking down to the foot, but somehow when He-Man and them come through, this key is miles away.
And you just used the word foot, and this is relevant. I found it extremely distracting when they kept using, like, Eternian units of measurement. Yes. And never bothered to explain what it was. Yeah. They're going to be here in half a Grildon, and we're not going to even have a fight. It's like, whoa. You've used like 14 different units of measurement in relation to how dangerous everything is, and no one knows what you're talking about.
Right.
And the humans just, they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. That was really close. It's like, wait a minute. What are you talking about?
So I'm thinking at this point, you have three fantasy characters and a troll. You know, in modern day Earth, I'm like
more like two Starship Troopers, Conan, and
Willow.
And Willow,
yeah. So I'm like, oh man, we're gonna get a ton of Star Trek IV style fish out of water jokes,
and we do.
Do we though?
No, not really.
We got the cow. Really. Not the cow and the ribs. The order of the ribs.
No people.
No, they don't order. They steal. It's not like.
Oh, they steals the ribs. That's right. With some weird grappling.
Not like Gildor, you have
rod.
To cover your face because people. Will...
And apparently, Man-at-Arms is always really hungry.
Yeah, the funny thing is, you never in the whole movie, they interact with almost no people, and they don't really go anywhere. So at no point in the movie are the Eternians, again, like, He-Man's dressed like Conan. He's never like, wow, this is weird. They're just like, all right.
Yeah, the cop is the only one to ever say anything. Like, the cop says, like, oh, is this a freak show or something? And that's, like, the only,
and
like,
I'm still,
reference
and this town is only inhabited by police, apparently.
Right. Oh, we'll get into that. Yeah, there's, like, no... I'm guessing the extras budget was cut dramatically.
Like, completely.
Yeah. But there's never... You don't get any real fish-out-of-water jokes, other than this opening bit with the ribs, where, like, Grildor, like, steals these ribs from Courtney Cox's, like, restaurant, and they eat them. And that's... I don't even know if there's really a joke there.
No,
they just
not really.
They're just hungry, and she's like, ew, animal, which kind of... I'm like, yeah, but there's a lot of people on Earth that won't eat animals with the same reaction.
Yeah.
They're like, ew, you eat ribs? That's gross. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad we took an entire 4 minutes of this movie to lay down that some people don't like meat.
People in Eternia don't eat meat,
And then the movie has... For a movie called Masters of the Universe, we spend a lot of time with Courtney Cox
and
her boyfriend talking about their relationship and if she's going to move to New Jersey. Because when I see a movie about He-Man, I really want to know, I want it to be centered on, is Courtney Cox going to move to New Jersey? Like, that's really, I want to know if it's going to happen.
This is kind of depressing, too, because she's in love with this guy. She's going to break up with him because she has this overwhelming urge to move to New Jersey. And her parents died in this horrible plane crash. And she blames herself, and they're at the cemetery, and she's crying, and it's like, whoa, this is a movie for kids.
That's
pretty heavy and depressing.
When she's in the car with her boyfriend, and she saw him out leaving that night, and she goes, I just want to go to the cemetery to see my parents. And I was hoping so bad that, like, her parents were, like, the caretakers of the cemetery. Like, I thought that would have been awesome.
They're like, hey, guys, I'm going now.
They're just the caretakers.
And I'll say about the boyfriend is, how devoted do you have to be when she's told you she's leaving you? And you've been dating, you get the impression they've been dating for years and years, like high school sweethearts. And I'm not sure if they're still in high school or if they're slacking off.
He has a show at high school, so.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
he's got some music. Yeah.
But so he's just like, yeah, you know what? I'll give you a ride wherever. I'll take you to the airport. It's like, wait a minute. No normal man would act that way.
Yeah, I mean,
like, are you going to come to my sound check tonight before you leave? Like,
you're coming, right? Right?
I mean, she even has a plane flight. Like, she's gone.
This guy can't take no for an answer. He really just can't. Yeah.
Like, he's the guy he's next, like, buying his last dollars. He's buying a used car and driving. And that's the next movie.
Yeah.
Masters of the Universe 2 is the boyfriend driving cross country, getting in all kinds of misadventures, going to New Jersey to get her back.
When Ram Man accidentally steps on his car. And how tone deaf this movie is, because, like Jack's saying, we get this really heavy scene in a cemetery. She's like, my parents died. They were in a plane crash. I was supposed to be with them that day. This is my fault. This is really deep.
And
look at this. I found a bright, shiny thing on the ground in the cemetery.
It makes music.
I love how excited they were, too, about this freaking... When they're playing the music on it, and they're both, like, freaking out like it's the most amazing thing they've ever seen.
And they hadn't actually really established that he was a synth player at all, at this point. He's just like, wow, and he's, like, kind of picks it up, and he's, like, hammering on it. And she's like, yeah, and they're, like, grooving to it for a sec. You're like, wait a minute. Aren't your parents still dead?
And
like,
would it have killed them to establish that he knew how to, like... They sort of established that he has, like, a gig or, like, a show or something, but, like, would it have killed him to establish that he was a keyboard player? Like, of all the pipe we've been laying in this movie, you can't give us that basic thing
and
of,
that
like, hey, he plays a keyboard.
And that information is hugely important later on as well.
Oh,
so,
vital. Yeah. Vital. Because I went through a big chunk of this movie being like, so does he know how to play music? Or, like, I was very confused if he was just...
Is he the roadie?
Wasn't playing anything, like, good on that.
Is he with the band?
Check
is he
out.
In the band?
It's like picking up an accordion and not knowing how to play it. And just making noise with it.
He also hooks it up to his amp, which raised a thousand questions for me. Why did Grildor put an XLR, like an output in it that would hook up to an Earth amplifier? That really made me...
Well, I mean...
Like, just in case you had to ever go to Earth...
He may have already, arguably, because the thing technically goes through time and space, because he later on offers to send them wherever they want to go.
Yeah,
we already know he doesn't know how to use it.
He may have gone ahead and be like, you know, this is important, and he goes ahead and designs it with the input.
Yeah.
So...
Maybe. And so, okay, so when he hammers away on it, he also instantly seems to know where the off button is. Because he, whenever he hammers away on it, Skeletor somehow back in Eternia knows, oh, someone's activating that cosmic key, and here's where it's being activated.
Like a trace, they gotta find it.
But when they turn it off, they're like, oh, okay, oh, someone turned it off now. And I it was never clear to me how he knew what the off button was. I thought, like, unless this somehow was like Sony.
At no part in the movie did anyone turn off the key. I just got the assumption that it was just always there, and you either used it or you didn't.
It seems like
it's kind of always on.
When it puts on that big light show, because it's like, oh, when I press these buttons, it makes a big light show. But that's kind of weird, so I'm going to press this button and turn it off. And I'm like, that button turns it off. This was very Halloween 3, where Tom Atkins knows how to work the Silver Shamrock computer. And what basis do you have to be working this thing? Yeah. How are you? Did you download the user manual? And we do also meet Skeletor now knows where they are. He's going to send a bunch of mercenaries who are Beastman. Who's it? Beastman?
The snake. Beastman.
Blade.
Blade.
Trapjaw.
Trapjaw.
There was no Manny faces. I just want to say that.
I Tattoo.
Was, and there was whoever there. The snake person was.
Tattoo was there, yes.
Yeah. And it's... So he's sending them down to... He is the coordinates. It's really interesting to me how Skeletor is much more familiar with the use of the cosmic key than Grildor, who's made two of them. But then the guy who actually made it. This would be like
The kid who just found one seems to be more competent with it than Grildor.
I felt like this would be like me
Grildor
showing...
must be like tone deaf. That's the problem.
And doesn't even know what he made. Like, it would be like if I showed up to Apple and I was like, hey, let me show you what your iPhone can do. Like, look at this and this and this, you know? And they were like, oh, I had no idea.
That's really neat stuff.
Yeah. So the mercenaries, the mercenaries show up at the high school where... Courtney Cox's boyfriend had plugged it into an amp and done like a little impromptu show with it. And we get what I loved is that...
he's wasting time with the synthesizer and he's going to this music store when his girlfriend's leaving in an hour.
I'll be back in 15 minutes.
And he leaves her there and she stays at the gym.
Well, they set this weird... Like, the screenwriters like set this weird challenge of Courtney Cox has a flight tonight. She's flying to New Jersey. She's leaving tonight. But it's a hurdle that means nothing.
Right.
Like it's like Ken was saying early on. This is never really addressed, and it never becomes a factor. Like it's not pushing the story forward in any way. You're just like, oh, okay. It's presumed she just doesn't make the flight. All right.
The 15 minutes they spend explaining the backstory is completely thrown out the window.
Yeah.
Like 5 minutes after they do it.
Right. Like, I kept wondering if at the end if someone's going to be like, hey, so are you going to take that flight? Like, if that was it, can you get that money refunded?
It's like, yeah. I mean, are they going to charge you a change fee now? Because, I mean, aliens invaded, or, like, what's going to happen?
Was that a one-way? How did it?
Springsteen's on the phone. He's wondering where you are.
He wants to know if you can do Dancing in the Dark, too. So the mercenaries arrive on Earth and show up at the high school to find the cosmic key where they think it was last used. And they just show up. And David also knows that there's a janitor in the high school. It's pretty much the janitor and Courtney Cox, the only people in the high school. The mercenaries find the janitor. Don't ask him where the cosmic key is. Somehow they just know that this janitor, the first human being the mercenaries find, they don't ask if he knows where the cosmic key is. But he does pull a middle-aged man from Spookies and flies through a door like Superman. Through the top half of a door. How is it? I've never seen this before in my life.
I've
now
appear
seen
twice.
It in two movies where somebody goes through a door, the top half of a door.
Yeah.
It also reminded me of that scene in Kazam where the guy carrying CDs is just there. It's like, just beat him up.
Yeah.
Just gets assaulted.
The exact same kind of thing.
I was fascinated by what this janitor must think about this, because he's one of few humans in this room who interact with the attorney.
Well, I did laugh later on when they're wheeling him out of the school, and the boyfriend's asking him, like, what happened? He's just like, don't ask. You know, you'll never believe it.
He's on the stretcher.
You don't want to know.
Yeah. So Courtney Cox somehow... They're like these are the worst mercenaries in the world, by the way, because no one on Earth even knows that the cosmic key is valuable or that it needs to be protected.
Right.
They fail to steal the cosmic key from a high school auditorium
and with no people in it.
With no people in it, and the people who are in it don't even know what they're guarding, and they fail to just get away with this.
Yeah, and I looked away for like a second, and when I looked back, the whole gymnasium was on fire. Like, I don't know.
That happened twice in this movie, where you're not really sure how a fire got started.
You're
shooting lasers, but there's no fire. Yeah. How is this place engulfed in flames?
Like the
right
whole
now?
Auditorium, well, whatever, was like just engulfed.
And the mercenaries start freaking out. They're like, "Take her alive! She might know where the key is." Apparently, no thoughts that the janitor might know where the key is. Don't worry about him. Leave him in the burning gym that you just like great whited.
Apparently, a guy in a jumpsuit means the same thing here as it does in Eternia.
Yeah.
They don't know anything. They're expendable pieces of. Yeah. You know, just get rid of him.
Just get rid of that guy. He's
got a mop. He's useless.
I just assumed he actually was dead until they wheeled him out later in the movie.
I'm sure the actor would have, too.
Yeah. But, So it's now nighttime on Earth. He-Man, and this creeped me out, He-Man has been walking around looking like He-Man in a loincloth and a cape for hours, apparently on the streets, interacting with no one. No one
Zero
has interacted with this
people.
Guy. I mean, even if this is Southern California, it's a guy in a loincloth and a cape. How is this okay?
And a sword.
Yeah.
There's a huge sword strapped to his back.
Massive sword. Like, not even, and he's just kind of plowing around like, "Hey, have you seen the Cosmic Key?" "No, I haven't." "Okay, good." Yeah. And like,
yeah. And there's no, I just kept thinking like, "Oh, the fish out of water jokes are going to start now." Nope. They're like, "No, we covered that with the ribs bit. We don't need to go back to that. It's just, we need to move forward with just Eternians walking around on Earth, and it's just, everyone's cool with it." So, is this where the mercenaries are chasing Courtney Cox?
Yeah, they chase her
in the alley.
Warehouse or something?
It's like the one, there's like two street set pieces in this movie, and this is one of them.
The one with the chain-like fence.
Yeah, and the pizza sign.
Where Blades gets a really long action shot where he's like cutting the fence up.
It's basically where Keanu Reeves was in certain scenes of Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And that guy, that is like his big hero moment. He's like, "Hold on, I'll get us through this fence.
This is why I'm here."
And he does spin moves and like upper slashes, and then the fence like splits and they just kind of walk through.
Thank you very much.
Courtney Cox
cool.
is in there.
But when it comes to cutting people, useless.
Oh,
he's
horrible.
Absolutely. No skills. Absolutely.
So they're chasing Courtney Cox through this.
And then she runs into He-Man.
She runs into He-Man.
And she's literally, totally, like, she buys it right away.
Right away.
Oh,
she's
help
being
me.
Chased okay. by these crazy guys. A guy in a tight loincloth and a cape is like, "You're safe now." And she's like, "Oh, thank God." I'm like, "You are not safe.
These 12 guys are after me. Go get them."
Yeah, this is not
How do you know he's not one of those guys? He's a psychopath.
I guess that's
all
Blade had to do was say, I'm here to protect you. It's okay.
If Blade had a loincloth on, she would have been like, "Well,
they should have thought of that. That was a serious problem."
Yeah.
Or they try a different trick that works perfectly later on. Where is it in this scene?
That's ridiculous.
So Courtney Cox kind of joins in the fight. She shoots one of the bounty hunters.
Yeah, he gives her a gun. He says, "Wait here," and he hands her a gun.
He hands her the blaster he's been using instead of his sword since the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. And if you watch in the background, if anyone's watching this movie again, while He-Man and Beast-Man are fighting, I don't realize if Courtney Cox was aware or being told by the director that she was in some of these shots. She's standing there looking so bored. Like, just, if you watch for her, I'm convinced she didn't know she was, like, actually... I think she just thought she was going to be out of focus or something. She looks so lifeless while He-Man and Beast-Man are fighting. And
she's still mourning the death of her parents.
She's thinking about that flight she has to catch.
She's like, "Crap, this flight's in an hour. I'm not even on my way to LAX."
Stupid clingy boyfriend. How am I going to ditch him?
I wonder if Loincloth Man has a car.
Thank God this is 87 and there's no security at the airport.
Yeah. I can bring anything on. I can bring this
laser
gun.
I'm going to bring this blaster with me, and at least I'll be safe on the plane.
And then so He-Man, my favorite, I don't know if anyone has a favorite Dolph Lundgren line in this movie, but mine was, so he scares off the mercenaries. I'm not really even sure why the mercenaries
left. They go, "Retreat," and they all run away.
Yeah, someone yells "retreat," and everyone's like, "Sounds good."
Well, Evil Lyn brings this up later, though, shows up, because she's not there yet.
Yeah, Evil Lyn would not have been cool with that. And He-Man just turns to Courtney Cox, and he's like, "You're safe now. Do you understand?" And he says it like that, and I'm like, "What? You are not making me feel safe. I do not feel better with you saying that.
I need you to believe me."
Yeah.
"Come with me if you want to live."
And this is, and that might have been, I think, the worst ADR line, because it also
there's one coming up where he says something about, I can't remember what he's saying, but the way he ends the line is hilarious. He's saying something like, "We need to get the element of surprise," or something. He goes, "We need to get the element of surprise."
Yeah,
it's like weird, like yeah. like it was half like they cut like more words off.
Yeah, he comes up at the end. Yeah. I remember that.
I think that's my favorite.
He pulled a Ron Burgundy. Someone put a question mark after it.
Surprise.
He was surprised by the suggestion.
So meanwhile, the boyfriend has brought the comic relief key. He's brought it to a music store.
And is he trying to sell it?
No, the guy offers to buy it. He's still convinced it's a synthesizer.
Yeah.
It's like some futuristic
instrument.
Or, doesn't he say it's at 1.2? So yeah, I think this is from Japan or something.
It's a new Japanese.
This is great.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, "Oh, I want to buy it." And he's like, "No, man." And he like.
Yeah, and then while he's playing, this was interesting, because while this is going on, all the crap is going on with Courtney Cox and Beastman and He-Man and all that. So while he's showing, now they are unaware of this. Yeah. So in this scene, in this bubble that is this music store, the boyfriend is showing the store clerk his awesome Japanese synthesizer glove thingy that he's hitting hammered notes on, and he's having fun with it, and he's playing with it, and police cars start driving by. And his friend is distracted and says, "Whoa, wait, stop playing your magical futuristic instrument. There's cop cars driving by.
Let's go check it out."
Why would he ignore this amazing thing that?
My favorite thing is that freaking the scanner or whatever he picks up is like this gigantic, like,
yeah.
this huge like box thing. He's like,
he does stop him. He's like, whoa, something's happening. Let's check it out. Yeah. He goes.
Yeah. Well, we'll get back to your alien technology in a minute.
Like, I just saw a cop car and an ambulance go by. Yeah, there's something going down. And there's no one in this town, so something really is going down.
I like how they finally make the link between the teenagers and the cosmic key and He-Man, where He-Man's like, "I'm looking for a cosmic key." And in his whole description is, "It's about this big with light." And based on that, that is his whole description. Based on that, Courtney Cox is like, "I've seen it." I'm like, what? Anything. That could be literally anything. It could have been a street light, the way that He-Man described it.
The open sign in the front of a pizzeria. Oh.
Yeah. And so now, now we get the principal from Back to the Future in the movie.
Yes.
Strickland as a cop who is...
"I don't know that you're under arrest."
Why, how does he even get brought into this
movie? Oh, well, this scene is ridiculous. So the boyfriend goes, the guy plays on the gigantic scanner. He picks up the scan,
yeah.
And they hear like there's a fire and vandalism at the high school. And the boyfriend's like, "Oh, Courtney Cox is there. I gotta go find out if she's still there." So he goes there, and he's like freaking out. He's like, "My girlfriend's in there." And the guy's like, "No, there's no one in there."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, I gotta go. She's in there. I gotta go get her." And he's like, "Whoa." And he's like. The boyfriend says, "I'm like, oh, why aren't you out there trying to find her?" And he's like,
"All right, fine." He
starts taking notes or whatever, and
describe her to me.
Yeah, she's like, yeah.
5'5".
She's about this long with light hair.
Because here's what's going on. He goes, "Well, she's about 5'5". She's got short dark hair. She's wearing a pink sweater. And oh, I don't know if you've noticed, I'm holding a giant piece of alien hardware in my arms." Cop has no interest.
So the cops, the cops taking down these notes, and he's like, "What are you, just go find her, why aren't you?" And he's like, "That's it, we're taking a ride." And he like throws in the car. He's like, "Oh, what, you're arresting me?" He's like, "No, we're gonna go find your girlfriend."
Yeah. Like, he gets in the car bizarre, like, he has to get in the car super awkwardly because he's carrying a giant piece of alien hardware. Yep. The cop, again, no interest in what this kid is carrying.
I will also notice in that scene there was a severe lack. The high school gymnasium is now completely ablaze and there's no firefighters there.
Right. Yeah.
There's three cops at the door. Yeah. And they get the janitor out and there's no firefighters anywhere. Yes. And none of them are concerned that the entire high school is about to burn down.
Yeah. And they're like, let it go.
It's a lost cause.
Let's save yourselves.
Let's go find your girlfriend.
Yeah,
who we know isn't here.
Yeah. So as Jack was saying earlier, the mercenaries show back up in Eternia, where it turns out that their retreat plan really was not good.
Yeah.
As one of them gets vaporized. Basically, Skeletor vaporizes a guy for retreating.
Mm-hmm.
So really, they probably should have hung on a little bit there. And the others are like, "Give us another chance." And I'm like, "Why? Okay."
And I failed miserably.
What made the little Crypt Keeper rip off the leader of that group anyways?
I
like the little, like the one that was with like the really bad, like Lord Palmerston wig that was like barking orders at everybody and did not have any weapons
or anything. I don't know if he was a character in the show. I don't remember.
I really wanted to see an organizational like flow chart for Skeletor's people, because like clearly Skeletor's at the top and then things get really murky after that. There's a ton of people, but I don't know who are the mid-level managers.
Whoever talks the loudest is just...
Yeah, whoever has the most annoying voice is the next.
And it seems like Evil Lynn is like the Destro of this world, who also kind of just gets to do her own thing when she wants to. And that would have been a more interesting movie. The Machiavellian inner workings of Skeletor's organization.
So he sends Evil Lynn with the mercenaries.
The three remaining, the ones he didn't vaporize.
Yeah, to go back to Earth, to now still find the key. Do what they failed to do in the first place, I guess.
Yes.
And what happens? They go to the...
The same chain link fence area.
They're basically in a warehouse.
It was a warehouse.
I don't know what it
now,
was.
Now, she had that piece like of technology where she like holds it up.
Yeah,
she's got the screen on it. And she can
see what happened.
So why couldn't she have just used that to find the key? It showed her the path.
Follow them, yeah.
It showed her everything that happened like hours before. How would she not be like, oh, here's the key.
Yeah.
I see where they took it now.
She just used it to make fun of the guy for getting beat by a girl.
Oh, lots of people, huh?
Yeah, video replay is way
better.
You got
beat by a girl. Yeah, I'm done with this.
Yeah, it's way more fun for making fun of your friends. It's like YouTube. You know, it's used. Yeah. And at this point, finally, the cop does wake up to the fact. He's like, hey, I don't think that this is a synthesizer at all.
They go to her house to try to see if she's there, and she's not there. But as soon as they walk in, the phone rings, and it's her. And for some reason, boyfriend's acting like it's not her. Like, he's pretending it's someone else on the phone.
Why is he weird with her in that phone call?
I don't know.
But the funny thing is,
he doesn't want the cop to know for whatever reason.
Even though he demanded the cop find her.
Yeah. Even though they're on their way to find her right now, and he's agreed to it. He's like, okay, let's go get her. But then he's like, it's you. He's here with her.
Hi, Aunt Sally. Yeah.
The ridiculous thing is that she says something like, oh, do you still have that synthesizer? And he like looks at it like really awkwardly.
And he looks back at the cop.
He's like, yes. So the cop then is like, oh, wait, maybe this is like something.
That's a great moment, by the way. Because he has to look at it. He's carrying like a 2.5-foot long object. And he has to look at it. Do you still have the Godsman key? He looks at a 2.5-foot thing he's carrying in his hand. He's like, yes. I know. Okay, yes.
If he was just like, or whatever, and not look at it like awkwardly, then the cop would have never...
He did that, but then he also looked back at...
He did.
Yeah, like,
in the same sentence, she's like, you're not alone, right? Yeah. Just say yes or no, and he like looks at it, looks back at him, and he's like,
he's
that's right.
He's literally like breathing down his neck. The cop's like standing, like touching him. He's like, looks back.
And he like
right
physically
his
moves his whole body.
Right in his face. Yes.
that scene made me laugh so much. It was so awkwardly staged. That was really like a failure of direction.
That was probably fourth unit director. They're like, God, we forgot this scene. We need to get it. We have $5. Yeah. Make it work.
I just felt like someone was telling him, like, all right, we need to better establish that. We need you to visually establish these things for us. So then what happens? So then the cop takes the key, or what?
The cop takes it and the kid's just trying to distract him, like waiting, because he's waiting for the girl and He-Man to come over, and so he's like, yeah, it's a synthesizer, why don't you give it a try? And the cop's like playing it, and he's just like playing it, and he goes, I don't think this is any synthesizer. And he like, then it just cuts away to like, I can't remember what's next, but
well, he shows him the light, doesn't he? He's like, well, push that red button.
Well, yeah, that's coming up. Yeah, because it might be there. Yeah, he shows him the thing, and the musical lights or whatever come up, and he's like, I don't think this is a synthesizer. But at some point, the kid's like, let me just, I'm just going to put some popcorn or whatever in the microwave, then I'll tell you about it.
It was a bucket of chicken. It was the same bucket of chicken that they were eating earlier, basically.
I'm going to put this food in the microwave, and then I'll tell you all about it. And so he puts the food in the microwave as the cop's playing the thing, and Skeletor is like watching this.
He scans the microwave.
Because he's getting the, or no, it wasn't Skeletor, it was one of the bad guys.
You're right, yeah, one of the mercenaries.
They're picking up the microwave.
He's picking up the cosmic key, and he's trying to track it, and the microwave is interfering.
So
he like pushes a button on his iPad, and the microwave
explodes. And their response was great. They're both like, whoa! And then they don't address it again.
That's never
addressed. That bucket of chicken just exploded in the microwave.
Well, the cop did freak out. He's like, he said something like, I've got schools burning down now. Microwaves are blowing up. He's like freaking out, like, you're coming with me.
Yeah.
this isn't any kind of synthesizer I've ever seen.
And is this then when the mercenaries burst into the house with the kids still in there? Or like the cop takes...
The cop takes... He's like, yeah.
He leaves.
Yeah,
the cop leaves. And then Beastman shows up.
Because the kid is like, oh no, I swear to God, I just found it. You can go ask Charlie for some reason.
He's
Charlie.
Like, I'm going to go run this to make sure it's not stolen.
Yeah.
And if I'll give it back to you if it wasn't.
Yeah, and or whatever. Like, you wait here, and he goes to Charlie's.
Trying to be all tough. He like pushes him in the chest. He's like, and then I'll give it back to you. And he's like, oh, thanks.
Slacker. Yeah.
Also, then maybe I'll find out why the high school burned down after I find out about this weird synthesizer.
After we were there, but well, we probably could have saved it.
right. So Beast Man bursts into the house, and the funniest reaction that we've had to almost anything that's happened in this movie, when Courtney Cox's boyfriend's like, get out of here, and throws a Burger King bag at Beast Man.
Yes!
The craziest product placement we've seen in this.
Which, Burger King was their big, I remember when I was a kid, they had the toys and everything.
Yeah.
And yet, the only thing anyone eats in this movie is buckets of chicken and ribs, which Burger King doesn't have.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
He had Burger King bags there, but
he had like
no
an empty food bag, but they're only eating.
There was empty Burger King bags and cups in the sink when they first came in. Yeah. I remember that
they're eating chick but they're eating chicken and ribs which Burger King doesn't have,
right?
And yet they're the big like sponsor of the movie.
Courtney Cox,
you think you'd actually work in someone eating a Burger King burger and maybe enjoying some Burger King fries.
You'd like, think so, because at this time this like tasty. You know, a lot of like product placement was really shameless in movies. I'm amazed that they didn't tie it in.
And yet the only thing, you know, and the other only thing eatery we've seen is the bucket of chicken place and then the backwards pizza sign on the set with the with the like nondescript neon pizza sign that was on the set with the chain link. That's the only food, the eateries that exist in this town that we know of.
It's a really unhealthy town. And for some reason, the mercenaries look at this article in Courtney Cox's house.
They're tearing her room apart looking for the cosmic
key. The crypt keeper guy with the all of a sudden has a hook hand, which I didn't notice until that point. But they like make a point to show him or her it pointing at like going through the box with it while he has one regular perfectly good hand that he's not using.
Yeah.
So he's using his Captain Hook to like sift through the box for like no, just to establish that he's got a hook for a hand.
And why would it be going through their files? They're looking for a 2.5 foot long cosmic key. It's not in a like a 6 inch.
I wonder
long
if it's in last year's tax returns.
Maybe it's in this photo album.
Yeah. So he sees this article about. This was mystifying to me when I was watching it. He finds this newspaper article about how Courtney Cox's parents died in a plane crash, and he's like, ooh, Evil Lynn, this could be important. I'm like, how could this possibly
why would they care?
Be important?
No, it comes back, though.
Be important. And now they establish that, of course, we know the people in Eternia speak English, but now they read it, too. So I guess it makes sense.
Right,
yes.
That if in this other world, the languages are the same.
Well, and and the only thing he could have learned from that article is that the girl that they know that they're already looking for and they know they're at her house actually lives there.
They could have just waited for her.
And they're like, wait, the girl that we're looking for lives here. Here's proof. Here's her dead parents' picture.
And fortunately, there's a picture, so Evil Lynn sees what they look like.
And it's a really not great newspaper. Or no, there's like a real picture.
It was like paperclip to it or whatever.
Yeah. So now, okay, so the next note I have is that Skeletor and a gazillion stormtroopers show up in a space barge from Return of the Jedi.
Does that happen here?
I have that coming
the,
in.
The giant, like...
No, that happens after she gets a key, right?
Because
Evil Lynn does the bit next where they find out where she is.
Okay.
And she, makes herself look like her mom. After they hold
themselves
up.
That comes when they hold up
in the music store.
Right, they put the collar on the kid.
That's right. And they make him tell
yeah,
it's
where,
like a truth collar.
Where the cop is going.
And again,
they go after him.
She has a device that can show her the past. So she would know exactly where the key was next. And yet she bothers to put this collar on him and make him tell her.
Right.
Yeah.
So she learns. So
they're going to go to Charlie's, or they're trying to.
That's
track
where they
down.
Know it. They took it to Charlie's, and that's how she finds out and tells her.
And right after they leave, He-Man and his gang show up. And they get the collar off the kid, and then he starts freaking out because unlike Courtney Cox, he's like, wait, these guys might be the same group that just attacked
me. He has the only
me.
Realistic reaction to them that anyone's had in the movie. He's like, whoa, we got to get out of here. It's those guys.
Yeah.
And she's like, wait, no, they're okay. And he's like, oh, all right.
Yeah. That guy in a loincloth, he's cool. Yeah.
He just got brutalized by Eternians. And he's like, you know what? That's
look,
cool.
His laser is blue. It's not red. So he's a good guy.
Right.
His lightsaber. I mean,
And I'm convinced that there had to have been more fish out of water stuff that was shot and cut because if you watch when He-Man and those guys show up at Courtney Cox's house, they drive there in a car, and He-Man, it's a really wide shot, but watching He-Man, Dolph Lundgren in his He-Man costume, get out of a hot rod is hilarious.
Well, I do like earlier when he's getting into the hot rod, he has to take his sword off his back because he can't sit down. So it's like, wait, does he like hold the sword in his lap as he's driving in the car? Or?
It's funny, and they don't play this for laughs. Right. They just play this as
The other thing is you have Grildor, who has hijacked the car and gave it some kind of futuristic upgrades with stuff that apparently exists in 87 somewhere. He's driving and no one makes him get out of the front seat. He can't even see over the dashboard and they're like, all right, let's go. Take us. And he's like, all right.
Okay. And I still love how the cop is also unfazed and it's just like, I need answers from you guys. You know what? I don't care what you wear, you know, but give me some answers.
So He-Man and them get to the music store somehow before Evil Lyn and the bad guys.
Even though Evil Lyn knew to go to the music store.
Yeah, and I think they're like flying.
Head start.
They're like flying in like a
skiff. They're flying in the skiff the Sarlacc pit.
Jabba the Hutt sail barge.
And somehow He-Man and all them get there first in a hot rod, and they're why are they even there?
Well, you know,
because the cop has a thing. Yeah,
Can we just also note too? The bad guys are flying through a pretty big town in a skiff through the air, and no one has noticed it. At this point, with the exception of the janitor and the cop, Courtney Cox and her boyfriend, no other person in this town is at all aware that there are any weird people in their town. That's it. They're the only ones who are tuned
in. Based on when they're driving, they do, I think, two different driving scenes when they like match. Like, oh, they're flying over the – and then these guys are in the hot rod. There's no cars on the street and every light's green.
There's nothing. This is a back lot. This is like what a back lot. This is back lot. You're just seeing it.
Shameless.
So they probably could have gotten there faster in their hot rod because there was no traffic.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no other cars parked or otherwise anywhere in this town.
And so Courtney Cox also, she got wounded somehow, right?
Not yet.
No, that comes. Okay. That comes later.
So they're in the music store and they're trying to convince the cop to give them the cosmic key. And just then, Evil Lyn and all their stormtroopers show up.
So they get in the big shootout, which is the second of the scenes I mentioned earlier, where they're all behind cover and there's like 17 guards in there, Death Star troopers shooting at them.
Yeah.
And then He-Man's like, I've had enough. You guys need to get out of here. And he like stands up in the middle of the room, loincloth glory, with one blaster and his sword, and 14 guys shooting at him and nobody can hit him. Right. And they're 8 feet from him and everybody else gets out.
And this is a straight up Star Wars scene. This is nothing to do with the He-Man or any, this is just straight up Star Wars.
If he ran at them, first thing he did, if he ran at them with his sword right away, maybe you could buy it. But he gets in a literal shootout with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With lasers.
Yeah.
He-Man. Who doesn't use a gun ever.
Well, he does use his sword to deflect lasers. So.
Right, but he's not advancing on the group. He's not like going to take them out.
He's like, just like, hey, look at me, shoot me.
He's like, they can't hit me, so I might as well just shoot back at them because I'm a much better marksman than they are.
So during the shootout, what's his name? Gorlick?
Grildor is working with
the
Cosmic
room
Key.
Working with the Cosmic Key. Courtney Cox is back there and the cop.
And the
boyfriend is holding a gun on the cop. So Courtney.
Oh no, because Tilo is back there too.
Yeah, she goes out to do the.
And then the cop makes a crack about like, oh, you're gonna let like, oh, looks like they don't want any women helping or whatever. And she's like, you know what? And she like hands the gun to the kid, and she's like, I'll be back, and like runs like, oh, this will be okay.
Yeah.
And then she even makes the point to tell He-Man. He's like, he like looks at her concerned that they're now alone with no one to protect me. She's like, it's okay, they're safe, because she just gave a snub-nosed pistol to a kid. They're gonna be fine, don't worry, they're safe.
So he's holding the gun on the cop and on Charlie too, I think. And Courtney Cox is like just kind of looking out this window in the back, and she sees coming down the alleyway her mother. And out of all the weird things that are happening, she's at no point like,
she
wait
buys
a minute,
this 100%.
Yeah, maybe this is. Yeah, she runs out.
We survived the crash. We've been hiding with the government. We have very important work.
We're working
to do.
On very important stuff. Yeah. Oh, all right.
Yeah. She runs. Yeah. So she meets her mother in the back alley. Yeah. She's saying all this stuff like, oh, we need you to get the cosmic key for us and blah, blah, blah.
And why would her mother
want the cosmic key.
And she's like, okay, I'll go get it
Nothing about that alibi makes any sense.
And they play it up, and they play it up like, like they really are. The movie is really trying to get the audience to buy into this.
And why, why
what's
just...
Evelyn in disguise, of course, so why are they even doing it? If there's a mother, you're alive! The music is playing, and they carry it on for a little bit, and I'm like,
if there's a back alley,
she does like an extended hug with her, and it's all like, there's like the actual smoke machine going, so it even looks like, oh, something's not right.
If there's a back alley with a back entrance, why wouldn't they just slip out the back during the shoot?
Why did Teela ever think they were safe to begin with?
Yeah. Or if there was a back alley and Evil Lyn knew there was a back alley, why didn't just a bunch of stormtroopers come through the back alley and be like, hey, give us the cosmic key?
Yeah.
You know?
And the kid's got six bullets and there's 28 stormtroopers outside. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I think we were okay.
Yeah. Hand it over. Yeah.
So yeah. Courtney Cox starts freaking out when she realizes what she just did, which was the dumbest thing I've ever seen in a movie.
Which is to go back, get the cosmic key, and give it to her.
Yeah.
And then without even thinking twice about it.
Yeah. And immediately Evil Lyn changes back into Evil Lyn.
And then she acts surprised.
She's what? You're not really my mother who died?
I lost my mother all over again. No.
You're rubbing salt into my wound.
So then they call. She calls back to Skeletor. And
that's when he brings in the giant parade float.
Well, first the cop goes out the front because the cop realizes finally, like, oh, wait a minute, maybe I should do something. And he gets, like, the shotgun, and he says,
you got a gun here?
Yeah, and he
starts fighting.
Well, I love because he tells Charlie, he's like, stay here, and he runs out the front. The whole music store is just engulfed in flames, and he tells Charlie to stay.
Wait in the burning building.
Stay here where it's safe.
To shoot at the stormtroopers with a shotgun.
Stay here to die a fiery death.
Which we're hoping nobody was in the school that he left in the same fate.
Yeah, this is their standard MO for Eternians. Burn a building down and no one will notice.
So the cop gets shot at and he's like, I gotta get some backup. And he like just runs away. And that's when Skeletor and all his guys come from Eternia. And there's this big chase scene with
a giant portal, which again, Grildor makes the point to say, I've never seen one that big. And Skeletor, who is now using a device that he invented, opened it with two keystrokes exactly where they needed to be.
So I can't remember how it happens, but the group ends up running to the rooftop somewhere.
And He's flying on a flying disc.
He gets the flying disc.
On like a hoverboard.
Yep.
And
he's another
Back to the Future.
You know what he does with the hoverboard?
The Super Duper Looper.
Super Duper Looper.
Yes, he does.
The most dangerous and least effective rescue attempt
really
ever.
And also, at this point in the movie, is the only time He-Man has been shot by a laser. Even though there's been two very major scenes where he's standing in a wide open room getting shot at within less than 10 feet away by dozens of guys.
But when he's flying
and this
the
guy,
air.
Well, he's doing the loop-de-loops and everything. The guy happens to wing him with it. And they make a point where he's like, ow.
Yeah.
And then like he gets him with this. I'm like, wait a minute. Either that guy is like, they should have put that guy in He-Man to begin with. Like, they should never have bothered sending anybody else. If he's the only one that can hit anything, let alone a flying, moving target.
He should be Skeletor, really.
And there are now hundreds, because Skeletor shows up, and there are hundreds of stormtroopers
in formation.
In this town.
And nobody's, this is something I really noticed going back to the empty backlot obviousness of it. There are no people lining the streets. Like, oh my God!
And
getting corralled by the bad guys, or they're not breaking windows, or they're not like, oh, and there's no kneel before your master scene, you know?
There is
literally
nothing.
It is a massive sail barge with this epic throne. Skeletor is on it, making commands, and his hundreds of troopers are marching. The evil music, dun dun dun, is playing,
and they're literally marching in formation, in step, in front of his giant parade float. They're only lacking big balloons. That's really all they're.
Not a single human being. Nobody's on the street.
There's
at all.
Lights on in windows, I was looking for. Like, there's nothing.
There's no news crews there. There's no mayor trying to talk him. No, this is our
town. This case, you'd think it's been a while. The president might be there.
No, it has been.
Ever.
It's been all day.
You know?
Yeah.
So this is where Courtney Cox gets zapped by Skeletor.
Yes.
And
she's got this hideous wound. It's
split show it. It looks like Freddy Krueger's face.
And
this is where Skeletor tells He-Man, either you come be my slave, or...
Or he says, you know, he threatens to kill them all, and he's like, I'll come with you if you promise to let them live.
No, Skeletor gives him the option.
Oh, he does.
He does. He says...
And they're like, either, no, He-Man, don't do it.
Yeah, he says, either come with me to be my slave, or I'll kill them all.
And then he says, I'll come with you, but you have to promise to let them live. And he's like, okay. And he's like, oh, He's just like, oh, he'll betray you to Skeletor. And he's like, no, he gave me his word. Yeah. Like,
which also, given what we're about to find out, he doesn't need. Why does Skeletor want He-Man to come back to attorney with him?
He doesn't.
I think he just
wants
him to be a slave.
In a movie, he says he doesn't want to kill him because he doesn't want him to be a martyr to the people.
Which I find actually kind of hilarious that attorney would have. Him. Oh, and he says a saint. He's like, they'll make him a martyr and a saint. Which I find really funny that that kind of those are both like highly religious things. And you assume that Jesus has somehow gone to Eternia too at some point. So they know what a martyr and a saint is. To make He-Man such if he killed him. So
I think too he wanted to humiliate him and make him his slave.
He wanted to use the laser whip
and
to whip him to get his cheap thrills because he has a fetish for tying up muscular men and watching them get whipped
in loin
by
cloths.
Laser whip.
Yeah.
In loincloths.
So they leave everyone else on Earth with the other cosmic key.
Yeah, it doesn't bother to take it. Yeah,
oh, they fried it.
Yeah,
It doesn't
completely break it because it's just like there was like one component in it that was broken. It was like the coordinates. He couldn't get to the coordinates, but it still played music or something.
It wiped the internal memory.
Yeah,
but somehow hooking up a Casio keyboard to it can actually rectify that.
Yeah, which is so it's okay. And then the Courtney Cox's boyfriend is like, "Hey, wait a second. I know the crappy song that will get us back. I know that song that this thing's been playing.
I've got perfect pitch.
You know.
I remember when you first turned it on. I remember the melody." And he starts humming it.
Yeah. I was so hoping he was going to start playing like that Axel F song from like Beverly Hills Cop on the synthesizer.
But Grildor, and jump. I love how amazed he is. He makes the point to say, oh, yeah, everything in the universe is tied together with harmony. And then none of them have any clue what music is.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh.
And Grildor made this.
You're the
he
one that
this.
Can pull the music out of the air. And it's like, wait, so you understand that harmony rules the entire universe. You made this incredibly intricate device that can open portals through time and space. And you don't know how to make music. You don't even know what it, like, you couldn't tell anybody what the music is at all. Like,
well, does this mean that entire civilization in Eternia had no concept of music? Because isn't that one of the earliest concepts of, like, humans?
I don't think so. Don't go that deep. I liked the boyfriend's explanation for why he remembered the tone for the cosmic key to get them back. She's like, oh, I was going to use that in a song. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that'd be a terrible song.
I'm going to steal that.
Yeah.
Another one of the many useless scenes in this movie, just to try to force a comedy scene into it, when Teela blasts the, like, speaker that's playing like the elevator music is like, oh, but that thing on, I can't think. And she's like, bam, and it like it's there and then it disappears. It doesn't just blow up. Yeah. It's like they cut it really quickly when it was there and when it wasn't because they couldn't afford to get anything to blow it up.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, thanks. And they kind of just look at each other. And then he goes on to why was that even in there? Like,
it was such a weird beat. Yeah.
And there was no point to have that in there at all. Like, it served nothing.
Yeah. And it also makes me the point as I'm watching this, I'm like, I don't know if He-Man, you could make a case that He-Man is not the hero of this movie. That
He-Man
he's got
like
he
four
got
scenes.
Yeah.
At this point, he's barely been in it.
Yeah, he's barely in this movie called like He-Man. Well, it's just, I guess it's called Masters of the Universe.
He has
a
pretty prominent spot on the cover, though.
Yeah, he is not
the movie
hero.
Went with the subtitle of the show as the main title.
I would even make an argument that Skeletor is the hero because I can't believe He-Man was in charge of anything. I mean, the Skeletor reign looks pretty bad, but I'm guessing that the He-Man reign was not well organized.
And seeing how all Skeletor really wants, we get his main motivation coming up. He only really wants people to bow to him. That's all he really wants.
He's like General Zod.
Like, if you bow to him, he'd probably leave you alone.
Yeah, just like General Zod. Yeah.
Let you go about being a productive member of society.
Yeah.
Just so long as you kneel to him every once in a while. Yeah. That's not too much to ask from your overlord. I mean,
he
seems like a pretty reasonable guy.
I also thought that Skeletor's TV channel was better than Halloween 2. I mean, if you said to me, would you rather watch Skeletor's TV channel for 2 hours or watch Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 again, I would take Skeletor TV. You know,
yeah,
I thought it just had better content and it had a better flow to it.
Yeah, very much better produced than.
So where are we at now?
So they go back. Yeah, he plays the thing.
Well, he fixed Grildor, having no knowledge of what music is at all, which he's said a couple of times now.
Yeah,
somehow manages to hook up a 12 key Casio keyboard to the key the
which
cosmic
somehow
key.
Wasn't burned in the massive fire.
Right, he happened
store.
To smuggle it somewhere. He hooks it up to the cosmic key through that input he had the foresight to put in.
Yeah.
And that somehow makes, like, he can now play the...
Right.
Oh, by the way, you know, it has an input and an output.
Yeah.
It has an amp output, and it has a like a device input.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, he at least, you know, at least he thought of that.
Yeah.
So that, and then the guy, the boyfriend, plays the tune, which on a obviously not on that keyboard.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that keyboard had 12 keys. And it's like this huge orchestrated moment.
Well, at the same time, the cop is like running at him with his shotgun.
And he's like, he's oh, that's when he runs up. He's like, yeah. don't turn that thing off. And yeah. they're like, no. And then they all get sucked in with, yeah. this is my favorite part. They must have lost a bet. That's the only thing I could figure. Because how did the warp take half of a wall,
yeah.
a brick wall, which yeah. which was the only way they could think of to get them cover.
Right.
And half of a, that hot rod, the like Corvette or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Which we've never seen the Cosmic Key do before,
no,
by the way.
No, because they've used yeah. it several times in this movie.
Yeah.
And people have gone through it, but it's never taken pieces of the environment and brought it with them.
Right.
Which yeah. also bears a lot of other question of, you know, half of these people would be dead just from traveling through this thing if it takes pieces of whatever's like around it.
Right.
Yeah. Only but, half of it, yeah. Half of
yeah.
a
car. So it's, you know, it only serves like they literally looked at it and they're like, okay, we've already established a throne room. There's nowhere for them to hide in here. We have to find a way to get them cover so yeah. they can be in this big shootout.
So, yeah, so all of a sudden this brick wall and half a hot rod appear in the middle of Castle Grayskull. And this is the one big thing I wanted to note, too. So to go back to the beginning of the movie, they're under siege in Castle. They're trying to take Castle Grayskull, and they're like, things are going really bad. We got to get out of here. They come back to Castle Grayskull. Things are notably worse than they were
There's
when
way
they were
more
trying
guys.
To get out of there. There's way more yeah. bad guys. They are not in a better situation than they were than they left. But now they're like, all right, we're back.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'd also argue that now that they have another, they've got the Cosmic Key, so it's working again.
Yep.
And they take it back to Skeletor.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, you gotta, you know, they have Courtney Cox, but really, he can't rule the universe without two of them, or they've at least let you set up at this point. Mm-hmm. So why take it back? They took it right back to him, like right into the throne room.
And we now learn that Skeletor doesn't really need He-Man alive, but he does need He-Man's sword. This has never been established in the movie.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
not
that,
at all.
That all of a sudden it's like, oh, if he has this sword that He-Man occasionally uses
when he's not using a blaster,
when he's not shooting people, is vital to the plot, and that needs to be like stuck into a special holder for Skeletor to have control of Castle Grayskull. And now we kind of get some like, this is where it gives a couple of cheap like nods to the TV show with some like, I have the power.
Right.
And
which
like,
if I remember right, he used to say when he was transforming from Prince Adam into He-Man.
Correct. Correct.
So they did that entire moment where he holds the sword up and the lightning hits him and he lights up, except he's already He-Man.
Yeah.
So what, it didn't serve any purpose because he had the sword the entire movie. Why did it all of a sudden give him more power?
Yeah,
he's already He-Man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they didn't. Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. So now like all heck is breaking loose.
Yeah, it's just a big fight.
Very generic ADZ.
Yeah,
sort of fight. And the biggest laugh I got in the movie is, so Evil Lyn is there, and at this random point during the fight, things aren't even going that bad for the bad guys. Actually, things are still looking.
Oh, they've got him pinned
good.
Behind half a Corvette, and yeah,
and Evil Lyn's like, I got to get out of here. And I'm like, where are you going? I'm like, you're arguably winning this fight. And she's like, get my escape pod. Right? I'm like, escape pod? What? Wow. Like, you know, okay. Like, I guess she read the script and was like, oh, this doesn't go well.
Was that before or after Skeletor had the golden armor?
Oh, when he had his, like, Thor armor?
Yeah,
on
he, there. Like, yeah. I don't know. Well, I'm not sure
epic
when.
In sword fight, he uses the power of the Cosmic Key and the power of the sword so he could gain this ultimate power, and all it really does is give him shiny like kabuki style.
Yes. And now he gold can armor. Now he can shoot gold lightning instead of purple lightning.
Yes,
but it's the same power he had before.
Yeah,
it's basically. Just changed color,
and he basically. Is now Darth Vader and the Emperor shooting Emperor style lightning.
Exactly,
which is pretty big in 80s sci-fi and fantasy, wasn't it? Purple lightning.
I think so.
Like
somebody,
Ghostbusters, it was everywhere. Terminator, well, they use it.
There's a lot of effects in here, like where Richard Edlund had done on other movies that are just like essentially being like recycled. Like the laser blasts are clearly Star Wars, and you know, so okay, and
so basically, so He-Man and Skeletor, you know, Skeletor with his armor on, whatever they're fighting, and
let this and be somehow our final battle.
Somehow he takes away his power.
Well, he breaks his staff, which another thing they didn't set up that how now all of a sudden the staff is what is the source of his power.
I guess, yeah.
Which he's had the whole movie, and they never once did anything but the fact that he wants to stamp it on the floor when he marches in, and now He-Man like chops it, and he's like my power, and it gets sucked out.
Turns into regular Skeletor,
and
then he gets kind of like lightly pushed over a ledge or something.
Well, He pulls out his own sword, swings it at He-Man, knocks He-Man's sword out of his hand. He-Man goes to run and catch the sword before it falls off. He gets it. He turns around, and the Skeletor like trips over his cape and falls into the pit.
Yeah, you can make a case that He-Man doesn't defeat Skeletor. Skeletor's costume defeats Skeletor.
And, and at this point, he's seeing as how I never saw him hit Skeletor with his sword. He's only hit like two people in the entire movie with his sword.
Yeah.
The rest of them, he hit with a blaster, or they forgot about them to address them and moved on to something else.
Yeah. So the good guys win, and we get the craziest plot twist in this movie, because I'm like, why is the cop with them in Eternia?
Yeah, and no, where this is makes, this no. story?
And like, where did he get his toga?
Cop is wearing a toga,
sitting
up on the throne, has a girlfriend.
And apparently he owns the castle now. He's like, whoa, why wouldn't I stay?
And he's staying in Eternia.
Like, and they're all like, oh, shucks, you're staying, huh?
That's crazy.
And he goes, look, I got a castle. I got a beautiful woman. Why would I go back there?
They're going to have a lot of questions to answer when they get back.
And the cop, theoretically, has only been in Eternia for 5 minutes. Yeah. It's conceivable he's never been outside of this throne room. And he's like, I'm going to stay here. That blew my mind.
Did you guys catch the after credits stinger?
Well, yes. There's one more thing
we haven't gotten to the ending yet.
Because the movie doesn't stop ripping off 80s classics. Now we, out of nowhere, turn into a ripoff of Back to the Future.
Yes.
Right.
Which blew my mind.
Now, and if you really want to talk, which Back to the Future dealt with way better than it should have, than this movie especially, was now she goes back, Grildor sends her back to before her parents die.
Well, because it's like this afterthought. Grildor's like, hey, I'm going to send you back. Oh, you know what? Do you want me to send you back a little earlier? She's like, I don't know where the vortex is opening. Okay. Like,
go back to where my parents are. And then, you don't hear her say it. And then she's in the really awesome nightgown that's like,
That's like the most conservative. That's like an 80-year-old woman's nightgown
This nightgown is amazing.
It's like complete with floral print. Like, my grandma had that same print on her couch. Yeah. So she goes downstairs. Her parents are alive. Because Grildor had somehow heard her and was able to adjust where the portal sent that he already opened.
By the way, didn't it look like her dad is Will Ferrell circa early 2000s?
And how quickly he jumped to anger, by the way, which I thought was great. Yeah. So she sees him. She's all like, oh, Mom, you can't fly today. She takes his keys, like, put those keys down, young lady. I'm like, wow, he's Superman.
Yeah.
Like, what happened before? Now I want to know.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you argue that now that she's back and it's before all of this happens, doesn't that make it all null and void?
It does.
Like, didn't the movie technically not happen?
I guess this was impossible for me to understand why this was even a piece of the whole her parents are dead storyline. Now this Back to the Future buff. I'm like, why is this even in the movie?
And it's like obvious that she and her boyfriend have memories of what happened.
Yes, they remember.
Which again, Back to the Future, Doc and Marty are the only ones that know anything else because they're the ones traveling through time. Which sure, whatever.
Now, here's a crazy one for you. Now we're present day Courtney Cox and her boyfriend transported in the past, so now there's four of them, two boyfriends, two Courtney Coxes. Or do the previous or their consciousness is transferred in,
because otherwise there'd be two Courtney
I think
Cox
this is what Doc Brown would have said would have collapsed the universe.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is the way they set it up earlier in the movie. Courtney Cox in the cemetery says something like, oh, I wish I could go back in time and save my parents, but that only happens in fantasies. And I was like, oh, okay.
This movie.
I know what the last scene of this movie is going to be.
Oh, this is where I kind of liked this movie not liked it. Like, I was kind of like, it's in a so bad it's good kind of way. And then we got to the Back to the Future ripoff ending, and I was like, oh, this turned. Like, this left me.
I don't like spending an hour and a half enjoying on some level a movie and then having the movie tell me, by the way, everything you just watched isn't going to happen because we just changed the past and so the future's different now.
And the subplot that was extraneous for the whole movie, that's our big finish. That's the way we're going to end it.
Am I kidding? Skeletor used the cosmic key to go back in time to ancient Earth if he wanted to conquer Earth. Because he didn't want to conquer Earth.
Yeah, he had no interest in
Or he could have gone back to when, you know, He-Man was born and, like, snatched him out of a crib and raised him as a boy slave or something.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know.
Ooh, that sounds like a better movie.
You know.
So then there's an after credit, as Jack was saying, an after credit scene.
Skeletor's head pops out of the goo.
And is like,
I'll be back. That's literally all he says. Yeah. I'll be back.
And the movie even cuts him off a little bit. Like, he doesn't even get to react to what he just said. He's the word back just left his mouth, and he has a goofy little smirk on his face. It freeze frames.
Kind of going back to Street Fighter, the fist coming out of the ground.
So is he just, like, swimming around in that red goo then? Like,
I guess. Did
he not die?
Was he just there?
I guess.
Did they not
check
for his body?
I don't know. Well, so here, let's jump right to this week's So Wrong It's Right question. We didn't really talk about her much, but throughout this whole movie, the sorceress in Eternia is just standing motionless in Castle Grayskull in a subplot that should not make any sense to anyone who hasn't seen the TV show.
And she's growing old for some reason.
And growing old. She has a very interesting connection to another cast member on this movie in a future project. And I will have you...
Wait, she has a what now?
An interesting connection to a cast member on this movie on something else they did. And I'm going to let you guess. Did she play in another project Dolph Lundgren's girlfriend, Courtney Cox's mother, the boyfriend of Courtney Cox, his girlfriend, or Frank Langella's wife?
I'm going to say Courtney Cox.
Which one? Okay. Was it just one actress the whole time?
It's just, it's the sorceress. Yeah, the sorceress is
just
one actress.
Well, because she's old at one point.
And she looked, I mean, I'm going to say age-wise, I'm going to go with Frank Langella's, the connection to him. Just because I feel like at that point, the ages might have matched up a little better.
Okay.
I'll say Dolph Lundgren's girlfriend.
I'm going to say Courtney Cox's mom.
Jack is right. She was Courtney Cox's mom on Friends.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I
didn't do
that. Yeah, it was a weird twist. She is by the way, the sorceress is a totally useless character in this movie.
They had to have her in there so the
she's a sorceress, and yet a force field makes her stand still and get her power sucked out.
Yeah, yeah, and her powers are never described because she's in a force field when the movie starts.
Yeah. And where is he putting her powers? Well, I mean, I guess at this point we got to assume that he's putting them into his staff that he has with him the whole time. And it's not in any way connected to her or.
I really have a lot of questions about what Skeletor's plan
was. We basically jump into this movie mid-story, don't we?
Yes.
We get to the climax of the first story, and then they get sucked to Earth.
Well, Skeletor's already stormed Castle Grayskull, killed all of the guards, imprisoned the sorceress in a force field.
This is like the climax of another movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, all that's left is He-Man to show up and attack him, which he does.
Yeah.
And then gets sent on some misadventures back on Earth, which...
A bunch of shenanigans.
Driving cars, eating ribs...
Yeah,
blowing up microwaves.
Microwave technology. They have the ability to look back in time, but they can't handle a microwave.
They're like, oh my gosh, this is jamming all of our signals.
Yeah. Well, I think that brings this one to a close. Let's do our quick plugs. As always, you can be our friend on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to be very curious to see what kind of crazy video stills are going to be
There's
up from
so
this
many
movie.
Choices.
I think this is going to be a loincloth heavy video still section. On our Facebook page. We are on Facebook at Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out. And you can actually follow everyone on this show on Twitter. Jack
at Jack Esterberg, yeah.
Cody
at Cody A. Wolf.
And Ken.
At Ken Chapman, CNY.
Very good. And you can follow the show at Wind Up Films. And I think that brings this episode to a close. This is a So Bad It's Good classic. I'll just say real quick. It's terrible.
Awesome. Bad.
It's terrible, but I kind of liked it in its horribleness.
It makes me want to watch the old episodes of the cartoon.
I'll say something I said before we started in that I still think this is the best movie based on a cartoon that was based on a line of toys from Hasbro that was ever made.
Yeah.
I can't argue
and
with that.
And including all of the Transformers.
And the G.I. Joe movies.
And the G.I. Joe movies.
Yeah. The movies based on cartoons based on toys do have a pretty bad history right now.
And if this is the best they have to offer, I'm just going to hope they stop there.
Yeah.
Although I hope someday they make a Thundar the Barbarian movie. I don't know if anyone remembers that cartoon. That was another crazy Conan ripoff.
Well, they'll have that, and then they're moving on to the Voltron.
That will be big too. Well, that brings us to a close. Follow along with us. Join us on Facebook and Twitter. And we will be back next week with a very spectacular new episode. We finally delve into the world of when James Bond movies go bad. Yep. We are going to start with Octopussy. Watch it. If you haven't seen it in years, it is, I bet it is two times as goofy as you remember it as, and it does not hold up well. But it's a lot, but it's full of unintentional laughs. So Octopussy will be up next. And yeah, that'll do it. We'll see you back here next time.